Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the February 12th broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Italian Tomatoes. I'm your host, Bob Curie. It is Friday evening, February 12th, and we're going to do something a little different tonight. We're going to try to tie some lessons from the music business and popular culture to the political scene, and the theme of the show is about the Supremes. What they achieved as a musical group, this legendary group from the 1960s, and some of the kind of lessons and analogies that we can draw from it. So it's a little different. I hope it's fun to listen to. It's just some administrative things first. The chat is open if you wish to participate in the chat, and it looks like we have a few people there. It looks like a couple of people from Free Fire Friday showed up, as well as Jaded by Politics. Just want to say hello to all of them. Free Fire Friday is a show on Blog Talk Radio that deals with firearms and Second Amendment issues, and it was just on. It airs at 9 o'clock Eastern Time on Friday evenings, hosted by Johnny Kempen, co-hosted by Richard Disney. And for anyone who's interested in Second Amendment and firearms, it's a fun listen. And I'm not very knowledgeable about firearms, but I always learn something. And yes, Brandy is in chat. I'm being admonished by the chat. I think it's going to be a lively evening, which is good, which is good. Jaded is there keeping me honest, as she customarily does. And I'm going to start my prepared remarks, and then I'll start recognizing the callers. I see a few callers on the switchboard, but let me get going first. And then we'll start bringing you guys into the conversation. Okay, well, what I wanted to do, again, was to focus on this whole notion of crossover appeal. Crossover appeal is one of the driving forces in both entertainment and in politics. It's the ability to attract people who customarily do not listen to your music or look at your entertainment, or who do not vote your way. And so it's useful to understand it in order to understand, you know, two main forces on our country, which are, you know, entertainment and politics. The Supremes were one of the most successful musical groups in history. And one of the reasons they got to be so successful was their crossover appeal, which flowered just at the time the American public was accepting that it had to change on matters of race. And I'm in my mid-60s now, and, you know, grew up in the 1960s when, you know, race had really did become such a huge issue as the civil rights movement came into force. And it's very hard for people to understand today who didn't live through it what it was like to have accepted legal segregation and all of the civil rights demonstrations and the police, the real police brutality that was used to suppress people who were just arguing for rights that everybody takes for granted these days. And then in addition to all of the public manifestations of unrest, there was a, you know, just the tremendous private ugliness and second-class citizenship faced by the African Americans of the time. And, you know, I just have burned into my memory in the early 1960s, I think it was 1964 or so, we had just moved to a neighborhood on Long Island, fairly affluent neighborhood, and I had walked to the local shopping center, and I was coming out of the post office, and there was a black couple coming out of a store, and then these kind of, I don't know, young, maybe, you know, not teenage boys, I guess late teen young men drove by the, you know, the black couple and shouted out "nigger," and I just couldn't get over it. I mean, I had grown up in before we had moved to that neighborhood, we lived in a kind of lower middle class neighborhood that was, you know, racially integrated, and I had never heard anything like that before. I mean, the neighborhood had its problems, but I never saw anything just so naked as that. So it made a huge impression on me at, you know, young age, and, you know, it's kind of stuck with me all these years, and I thought I would just bring it up. Well, anyway, the young girls who grew up in Detroit and eventually became the Supremes, that was, you know, Detroit was particularly bad in the area of racial discrimination and unrest. And if I remember correctly from my reading, I mean, the local department stores wouldn't even hire, black sales clerks because the discrimination was so bad. And again, it's just an unimaginable thing for us 50, 60 years later. Well, anyway, the Supremes were growing up in the projects in Detroit, and they started getting interested in music at a young age, and they worked on their act during high school, and Motown's Berry Gordy told them to hold off on going professional until they finished school, which was a very responsible move on his part. They perfected their sound, and then lightning struck. They had developed a very unique sound. They had excellent scores and lyrics, especially the musical team of Holland, Dozier, and Holland. And that coupled with Diana Ross's voice, that metallic rhythm and blues, higher-pitched voice that she had, they just produced strings of hits after hits after hits, and they became a fixture on TV. Now, on television, the color barrier had been eroding for quite some time, but it was still there. The Supremes just smashed it totally. They became such a feature on television that they just basically, you know, dug the path towards acceptance of all black entertainers, and they smashed those barriers totally. And it's interesting in, you know, listening to some of the surviving Supremes who recount their experiences, they were very conscious that although they were just a musical act, they were conscious that they were changing the profile of African Americans in American society. So, you know, a lot of discussion has focused on race in recent years, especially with the election of the first African American president. But I think we, Barack Obama talks a good game, but I think we really have to look that the main progress was made so many, many years ago by both the actual civil rights activists, but by people who just by living their life and pursuing their own opportunities in the African American community, just moved the dial. They moved it drastically. And again, one of the things that propelled that was their crossover appeal. And I think that's something that we frequently lose sight of in contemporary America, and especially in the politics that we have today, which is very divisive, very tribal, very segregated, if you will. So that's kind of what I wanted to go into as a theme, and I have a couple of clips I want to play. I'll start recognizing my callers. I have quite a few, so it may be a little crowded on the airwaves tonight. So I'm just going to recognize them in order that they appear on the switchboard. Area code 775.
That's me.
Oh,
Yes.
that's Richard, right?
Yeah, yes.
Richard Disney, co-host of Free Fire Friday, when I mentioned that show before. Area code 907. I have two 907s. This one starts with 32. Who is that? That's a shy person. Okay. Area code 703.
That would be jaded.
That's jaded by politics. Infamous.
Virginia.
Conservative blogger from Virginia, terror of Twitter.
Carol Twitter, baby, that's right.
Queen of Rhino Bashers and all other
Amen,
types of
brother.
titles.
Every day.
Area code 907, starting with a 7. Who is that?
It's your worst nightmare.
Oh my God! I don't normally do this for my callers, but in this case, I will make an exception. Hold on. Johnny is the host of Free Fire Friday, which just ended a few minutes ago. And like I said before, very interesting, fun show on firearms. And you pick up a lot of interesting insights by listening to that show. Now, for people who are looking for a nurturing environment, I just want to warn you, Johnny is an Army veteran. He was a sniper and a drill sergeant. So if you're looking for safe space, that show may not be your cup of tea. But very, very fun listen, and I want to welcome him. My brother has called in, and my brother is very experienced in the music business. Let me recognize him. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Bob. How are you doing?
How are you doing? We're going to have a brief discussion on the prima donna aspect of music, which then leads to the prima donna aspect of politics. And, of course, my brother is very familiar with the prima donna aspect of music, so he'll be a good source of insight. And then last but not least is a longtime caller to the show, area code 810. Is that who I think it is?
Absolutely. Hello.
This is Miss Malevolent, short Miss M for short, and I got to know Miss M during my first radio days in the 2008 election, 2008-2009 time frame. She's from Detroit, and we had many interesting conversations on the phenomenon of Barack Obama, especially in the African American community. So I want to welcome all you guys. The structure of the show won't be too structured, just a few clips, and then we'll just go into discussing whatever you guys want to discuss. But the thing I wanted to discuss as far as the Supremes was concerned was the dilemma of the crossover, because crossover is just so important in both culture and politics, but it generates its own problems. And one of the big problems is that if you are able to generate mass appeal, that means your movement or your group or whatever it is that you're doing is going to generate stars. And stars bring all types of problems. They undermine group cohesion. When you have a lot of creative people getting together and a group goes mainstream, it goes platinum, it starts crossing over it with its audience appeal, you get all sorts of differences of vision about what direction to go in, and then there are, you know, arguments and blow-ups and egos clashing, and that was certainly the case with the Supremes, because as the group matured and it kept producing hits, it was clear that Diana Ross, who was the lead singer, was just edging out the other members of the group in terms of her popularity and star potential. And eventually, the group, she left the group, and there was a certain amount of tension as her fame and celebrity grew. And then after she left, she was replaced. I think one of the lead singer was Jean Terrell, and the Supremes went on to have a number of hits after Diana Ross left, but it was never quite the same. And eventually, like all things, they parted and they went their separate ways. And that happens a lot in the entertainment industry, as my brother, I'm sure, can tell you. And it happens in politics. It happens with blogs. Many of us have been burned by the experiences we've had on blogs. It happens on Twitter. It happens with rival, you know, the Republicans were very unified in their opposition to Barack Obama, although not terribly effective at opposing him. But now that there is the high-stakes game to change direction, you can see how the party is fragmenting. And then the last theme I wanted to bring up as far as crossover and the problems that it generates is that there is an inherent conflict between mass appeal and base appeal, because when you start crossing over into attracting other types of people to your art, to your politics, to your whatever, the people who were with you at the beginning start getting very, very agitated. And that certainly has been a big issue in the black community with the identity politics, the whole issue of selling out and acting white and all that other stuff. And this is a problem faced by every ethnic group as it adjusts to the, you know, broader American culture, and every political movement too, because in order for a political movement to succeed, you have to win elections. And winning elections means you have to appeal to, you know, a fairly diverse, and I don't mean diverse in the politically correct sense, just a lot of different types of people. You know, not just true conservatives, not just true liberals, not just very religious people. You have to deal with kind of everybody and have some kind of vision that unites people of very different backgrounds, and that is very hard to do. And to the degree that you succeed in doing it, you're generating a lot of tension in your base. And again, it's not a pastime for the faint of heart. It's hard work. So that's kind of, I have some clips to go into with the recent primaries, and I also have one little Supremes clip that I wanted to play. But does anybody have anything that they want to bring up? Any takers?
No, not really.
I think crossover used to be you could rally around somebody who stood for the country. You could rally around the flag that we all had. We don't have that anymore. That's the difference that divides the left from the right today. The left hates America, and we love America. You might call it nationalism, because that seems to be a word that comes up quite a bit. And I think that's why Trump has a lot of appeal to people who would not normally come out and vote. He's a nationalist. He's a populist. I'm a nationalist, not a populist. But that was something we could usually come together on, with somebody who cared about the country. And you don't get that from the left anymore. How could you? Or as a socialist. I mean, it's crazy.
The country has definitely changed. And, you know, I think most of the people, you know, who are, you know, who have called in are all in agreement that we want to go a different direction. The kind of, you know, big question is, who's the guy who's going to take us there? And, you know, a lot of that just depends on the current set of situation, the current set of circumstances that we're in now, because Barack Obama is leaving behind one stinking mess.
No doubt.
Given that, the change of direction and the kind of person who can achieve it, that's a very different analysis than it was, let's say in 2000, when, people were kind of sick of Clinton and his scandals. But the country was in pretty good shape, by and large, economically, and even culturally, it was much less frayed than it is now. Whereas now, I mean, we have deteriorated so much on every front that the big perplexing question is, who has the stuff to engineer a turnaround? And, it's a very interesting situation.
We're at as low an ebb, or maybe lower than, because I remember the end of the Carter years. I was a kid, but I remember the end of the Carter years, where a lot of Americans were getting embarrassed to say they were American. And that, it was, and then Reagan came, and everybody all of a sudden it was like, hey, it's okay to be an American and say you're an American. And the thing is with Obama, he's like the first anti-American president. I don't think Carter was anti-American. He was just weak. Obama sets it out as his priority to take the United States down a few notches versus the rest of the world. And he seems to root for everyone else in the world.
America, for sure.
Yeah, he seems to root at least for everyone else in the world to win over the United States.
Yeah, I mean, I did. That is definitely part of his grand vision, his ideology, which was, there was an anti-war component of that with Iraq, but it went way beyond merely just an anti-war stance. I mean, many people can be patriotic and be against specific foreign wars.
I saw those people up close and personal. I would disagree. They weren't anti-war. They were Democrats. They were socialists. Every time you go down to D.C. to counter-protest them, the first thing you'd get is a communist manifesto. So I would disagree.
This is kind of an interesting aspect. Again, this this intersection of entertainment / theater and politics is very interesting to me, because you can't take anything that occurs in one of in these set like demonstrations or stuff as a representation of what people out in the heartlands think. That's the activist mentality. Activists are very different than normal people.
And I'm not saying all Democrats, because Blue Dogs, of which the base of the Democrat Party still has a lot of, I know I watched West Virginia flip red, and that's because those people are conservative. They're socially liberal, fiscally conservative, and they love their country. That's why they flipped it. Obama showed them, finally, that the Democrat Party is not that at the higher echelons of the party itself. And they're activists. So I'm not saying that about all that, which, by the way, is the crossover appeal that Trump is bringing to the table. He is bringing those people in.
Yes, he is. That's why, you know, the political calculation we will have to make when we choose who to vote for is the crossover thing. Do we want a conviction politician this time? Which would, to me, that's more of a Ted Cruz, or do we want somebody, you know, who has this coalition building? And there are, on the private lists, I think I made my views pretty well known. I mean, I don't trust any politician. I mean, I like Donald Trump. I like Ted Cruz. There are problems with both of them, but you have to make a decision, and, you know, my decision is I would vote for Trump. Now, if
And I'll be voting Cruz March 1st, but my calculations all the way through, because he's my guy, is that they, between the two, they're going to get so many delegates that they will overpower the GOP, who wants a brokered convention.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely hope that's right. I mean, to me, the outcome between Trump and Cruz is not as important as the defeat that either one of them would represent for the current Republican establishment.
Mm.
And I'll just go with the will of the people, whichever mm. one they choose. Now,
the only thing to look at, though, is right now, Rubio, Bush, and who else is left in there? Kasich, those guys are splitting the establishment vote.
Yes.
So you got to watch out when either all of them go down, or, you know, they go down to one, Rubio, say, then he might have enough to challenge. And I like Cruz too. I think he's the only guy that's been honest enough to stand up even against his own party for what is right. You know,
Don't tell me you're not loving that, by the way, because the last two election cycles, it's been the division of conservatives that has fed the GOP. And here it is, the division of the GOP, Inc., that are fighting one another. I mean, that is beautiful in and of itself.
well, it's fine. It's fine. All I'm saying is when it goes down, instead of three establishment candidates, it goes down to one, the establishment might be able to, the establishment might strike back. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but I think they're, I mean, between them all, I think they're getting like 30%, Carson and the rest of them, or whatever. I think they're like 60-some percent. So, I mean, it's huge.
mm-hmm.
It really is huge. And you know, this is the kind of the paradox that we're dealing with, which is that Cruz, who is the conviction politician, has, you know, really shaken the tree a lot, but not as much as Trump, who
mm-hmm.
is far less conservative than Cruz, but yet, I mean, has just had an arrogant instinct this time to go after these sacred cows,
mm-hmm.
globalism, trade, and immigration. In a way that, you know, Cruz, the conviction politician, whatever his policy positions may be, he hasn't been able so far to, you know, strike that kind of chord in the American public that Trump has been able to do. And but that's a, and that leads to the question of which Republican candidate is likely to generate enough crossover appeal to win an election. Because, you know, my view is that, and I think here I probably disagree with some of the, my conservative brethren, I don't always think conservatives win elections. I think people win elections. It helps to have firm principles, people like that, but it's more complicated. I mean, Reagan won because, number one, people were willing for wanted a change. Number two, the Democrats tried to make people scared of Reagan. And number three, people saw Reagan on television and said, I'm not scared of him, and things are so screwed up, I'm going to take a chance on him. And it wasn't so much conservatism that won that election. It was Reagan persona. You know, but again, that's just my opinion.
No, I would agree with you on that.
And it was America.
I think that's
kinda
what's
like,
going to happen. Right. It was all for America.
Yeah,
people were sick of America
rally
being crapped on. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now Trump does not have as an attractive a personality as Reagan.
But he has name recognition. That's why
and he has name recognition. And I think this goes back to what Richard was saying. I mean, in the Reagan-Carter situation, the country was in trouble, but people did not perceive Carter as being anti-American. I think this situation is the country is really screwed up, and we may need somebody who maybe doesn't have that attractive a personality to fix it.
Maybe.
So it's kind of interesting. The reason I chose to do this lead in with this discussion on the Supremes, one of the things that really struck me was the ladies on television who do this Viewers View YouTube channel. They're African American ladies, I think from North Carolina, and I'm going to play a clip that they did. After the Iowa primary and the New Hampshire election, I mean, they were, you know, they're very partisan Trump supporters, so obviously they're not too crazy about Cruz right now. But then they also went after the Democrats. And the thing that struck me about Trump was his ability, which I have not seen any Republican politician do lately, to attract at least some visible African-American supporters. So I'm going to play a few minutes of the Viewers View ladies, Diamond and Silk. And hold on a second, I'll put the video in position. Okay.
They may be a little liberal, so what happens to those people? Mm-hmm. And so when you see them playing their little games and their tactics, and then, girl, I heard that he is trying to unite the conservative party, the conservatives, all conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you also have people that are Republican, and they are not as conservative.
Mm-hmm.
They may be a little liberal, so
mm-hmm.
what happens to those people?
Mm-hmm.
He should be trying to unite the whole party. Everybody,
yes.
Not just one sector
of the
party. You know,
that's called division,
and he wants to.
So
it sounds like Ted Cruz wants to keep people
divided.
Right. But under Donald Trump, he's trying to unite.
He is.
He's uniting all of us.
Oh.
And baby, that's what we love.
Yes.
Y'all know the Democrat debate was last night. They liars.
Yeah.
They are the biggest liars that I've ever seen.
The biggest ones, yes.
And, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and put it out here.
Put it out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They said that they want to clean up the justice system. But Hillary Clinton's husband, Bill Clinton,
yes,
along with Bernie Sanders,
uh-huh,
he helped sign a crime bill into law that got thousands, probably millions. We'll say thousands because I don't want to hype. I don't want to overreact.
Yeah.
Thousands of African American men locked up. And then you got these young boys walking around here,
yes,
in the street without their fathers,
exactly,
because their fathers are still locked up. And now all of a sudden, they want to change what they created, because
they created
the system like that.
Now I want to tell you that they want
to
change it.
Just to get a black vote.
Mm-hmm.
And if black people, listen, y'all better wake up.
Right.
It's time for you all. Wake up.
Yes.
Sanders and Hillary Clinton,
yeah,
they not going to do nothing for you at all. They are pandering for your vote.
Yes.
They tell you we going to do something about the justice system,
uh-huh,
and they the same ones,
yeah,
that got the justice system the way it is, that wrote it up,
yeah,
that created it, and signed it into law.
Yes.
So no,
yeah,
why would we take and believe liars?
Yes.
Why would we take and believe them? They say one thing. They do another. Once,
yeah,
they get your vote, they do another. Yeah. And now they're coming back with the same thing.
That's
just like an old tire. You know how God tell you, baby, I'm not going to do it no more.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to cheat on you no more.
Uh-huh.
And then y'all get back together.
Yeah.
Y'all make everything cool.
Uh-huh.
Then he go out there and do the same thing. That's exactly what Clinton and Sanders is trying to do.
They cheat.
Uh-huh. They're cheaters. They are number two.
Uh-huh.
And what they do, and they lying to you to try to get
it's
your vote. Because when they get in, they ain't going to be thinking about you, no justice system. They could care less about that.
They can.
Because both Clinton,
yeah,
signed the crime bill, and I heard that Bernie Sanders also signed that he voted for it, too.
Yes.
So I don't want to hear nothing they got to say. The system that they...
Okay. Well, I could not imagine... those ladies saying something like that about in defense of Jeb Bush. I could not imagine it. And that, you know, to me, that is a classic illustration of Trump's crossover appeal. How real is it? I don't know. I mean,
well, they were Democrats up until they switched over to vote in the primary. So, and that's basically, they had, record numbers in both Iowa and New Hampshire, people coming in the same day, so pretty good. He's picking up those delegates, so I think his crossover appeal is huge, you know?
It's remarkable. Now, I mentioned before, crossover appeal has risks because, you know, Trump is really rubbing certain people the wrong way. I mean, very few of us care that he's rubbing the Republican establishment the wrong way, but he is rubbing some of the movement conservatives the wrong way. And so, you know, there's a possibility that, you know, it's all a math game, you know. The extra
Obama
votes that he brings in. Pardon me?
David Brooks. Obama had a crossover appeal. David Brooks, Peggy Noonan, a bunch of NRO guys all voted for him. They thought he was great. So
yeah,
there you go.
And what's weird is you were saying earlier about activists being different than normal people. I mean, Obama is an activist candidate. He was a community organizer in the South Side of Chicago, for goodness sake.
But the media was so complicit in hiding so much about his background. I mean, you know, when you look at the actual rhetoric of the 2008 campaign, he did a lot of centrist camouflage on a number of issues, health care, gay marriage. He was a very crafty politician.
Well, the media did it for
him. And the media
too
helped him a lot.
Yeah.
They sure did. And they're doing it for Bernie Sanders, too. They're not calling out the socialists for educating people on what a Democrat socialist is. So they do it for Democrats all the time.
Kind of refreshing to see so many Democrats admit they're socialist, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's about time that we've kind of flushed the Democratic Party out. And say, you know, one of the things about Clinton, the Bill Clinton, was that, you know, he did represent a certain centrist direction in the Republican.
They're gone, the DLC, man. They're gone. They got rid of
he put a lot of Democratic operatives in the government, and they have been slowly, you know, like termites in the woodwork, pushing the courts and the bureaucracy steadily to the left. And, of course, the big, you know, unfortunately, I mean, this is the danger of going to war. When Bush went to war in Iraq and the war turning out the way that it did, wars tend to push countries to the left when they're not successful. Actually, they push them to the left whether they're successful or not, because every war results in a big expansion of government power.
True.
So, But the main point about the viewer's view, ladies, they are fed up because the Obama economy has been a disaster for African Americans in particular. They're just skyrocketing unemployment and all the other dysfunctions that
they're
exposed
to. They can't blame Republicans, though.
Pardon me?
I mean, I've heard those same ladies say, how can you blame Republicans? There's not one to be found in the bad neighborhoods of big cities. I mean,
yeah, right.
For 60 years, it's been Democrat leadership from the city council level to the county level all the way up to Congress for those, you know, for Detroit and New York and Washington, D.C. and Chicago and, you know, on and on.
Yep.
They can't really blame their plight on Republicans anymore, and I think some of them are realizing that.
Well, I mean, let's get to the other part of it. I mean, let's not forget this is a celebrity-obsessed culture. And, I mean, you know, I think a lot of you all are hip to what's going on in your world as far as politics are concerned, but I think the vast majority of Americans are not. If you ask somebody to – I wouldn't even tell anybody to name all the representatives for their state. We're talking about on the federal level, not the state representatives, but let's say just the big guys in Washington. If I put it to the average American to name just the two senators that represent their state, most of them couldn't do that either. But Trump has name recognition because of our celebrity. And that's the other portion that's part of it, too. You know, I often said our coddling media sat up there and they gave Barack Obama a pass and he became the celebutant president. You've heard me say this many, many times. And I said, the next thing you know, we're going to have an actual celebrity for a president. I said Kanye West and Kim Kardashian, but it looks like it's going to be Trump because he has built-in name recognition and people are like, hey, why not this guy? So there's the anger portion for those who are politically savvy, such as this group. But I think a vast majority of the people who are interested in going with Trump are people who don't know anything and don't want to know anything about politics. They're
I'm so glad you brought that up because it gives me an opening to mention a blog that shall not be named. And when I was first starting to post, and my pro-Trump tweets are relatively modest. I mean, I'm not a Trump bot, but I did post some favorable things on Twitter about his potential. And some of the respectable conservatives from the blog that shall not be named entered my timeline and say he is just a reality star. And I think in one of the things I mentioned, you know, how big his Twitter following was before he announced. And then they, you know, kind of spat at me contemptuously. Well, that's because he's a TV star. And, man, I am just enjoying this particular phase. phase of the campaign because what the respectable conservatives do not understand and what the Republican establishment certainly doesn't understand is this is the kind of reaction that you're going to get from average middle-class Americans when you ask them to vote for a conventional Republican. Here is what the likely response.
Yeah, well, that's just a bunch of garbage, because I don't buy it, and you better watch yourself. I don't care how important it is. It's too damn bad if you're upset. The way you treat me, you're lucky I don't stick an ice pick in your goddamn chest. Like hell, I'll be there. You know what you can do. Yeah, well, that's just...
That was great. Perfect.
That was a live transcript from the Bush call center.
No, it's true. Most people are not engaged in that way. And, you know, and that's the other thing. And I said this before, the dangerous trend that the media not doing their job and going after Obama and his past and making those connections. I said all it's going to take, because, you know, despite the fact that most people are not politically engaged, most people aren't complete, utter morons. And they saw the fawning media just, they were so interested in being a part of history and facilitating the first black president. If they didn't do their due diligence as the, what is it, the third estate or whatever it is. What is it called? The fifth, what is it? The fifth estate?
I think it's the
state.
Fourth estate. No, they
fourth
call
fourth
the press
state.
The fourth
one of,
estate.
One of those
yeah.
estates. Anyway, they didn't do their job. They're supposed to be the other check and balance for our government. And instead, they abdicated that so that they could be part of a history and a narrative. And I said, all it's going to take is one guy to come in, some Svengali guy or whatever. And I'm not saying Trump is evil. I'm just saying that all it's going to take is for a guy to say, you see these bastards over here? They're liars. You see what they did? They didn't do their due diligence and check after what this president is, what his past is, and they gave you a narrative and they wanted you to buy it, hook, line, and sinker. So you're gonna believe them when they attack me? And sure enough, what has Trump done? Trump has, now granted, yeah, they are liars, but here's the thing: Trump, they themselves, the media themselves, has set up a fantastic petri dish for which he can grow his coalition, because most people don't trust the media with good reason. And
the press has undermined its own
media.
Trust.
Right, he's a man of the media. He knows how to manipulate the media, and then you have a populace that doesn't even trust the media as far as they could throw.
No, it's kind of, you know, one of the biggest changes that happened in the media. You know, the media always tilted liberal, but they were not afraid to go after, you know, Bill Clinton. I mean, they didn't do it as vigorously as they went after Nixon, but they did go after him.
They went after Carter, too, remember?
Went after Carter. In fact, looking at some of the Carter things, one of the things the media said, I remember looking at a video at the time, was we have to show we can be just as tough on a Democrat like Carter as we were with Nixon. But in one generation, that all changed. The media really perceives itself as part of the governing process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean,
yes,
it is. You had that ridiculous statement by Chris Matthews that I want to see this president, you know, succeed, but not in the sense that he just wishes him well. he looks at, you know, his media job is supporting the government. It's crazy.
See, and that's what happened. So you have this perfect storm. You have a man who... he has billions of dollars, but he doesn't have to answer to anybody. You have a man who has built-in name recognition. I kid you not, a majority of the people on the planet knows the name Trump, let alone just in this country, before somebody would know, say, Debbie Stabenow. Okay? And then you have a complicit media that has shined Obama's ass for these 8 years, and then you have politicians who have made promises to people and they never keep them. So I don't know why anybody is surprised that Trump is leading in the polls, that he's doing so well. I mean, it's just the perfect storm for him to do well. I don't understand why anybody is surprised by that.
Well, I think brilliant of him to come out for the illegals first, that was great. And then giving a voice to the parents of those children who have been murdered by illegals, because that's a big issue for me, my number one issue. Nobody ever listened to those people. I knew all of their stories, but most of America didn't know their stories. And he got them to be heard down on Capitol Hill. They'd never been heard.
Yeah.
And that was the moment that he took off, and he never went back.
Of celebrity. I mean, this is the thing that the respectable conservatives just don't seem to be able to understand, because they are looking at politics in the sense that you have to present this comprehensive whole. I mean, all conservative in every aspect, or, you know, you're totally unacceptable. And, you know, life doesn't really work that way. I mean, with Trump versus Cruz, I mean, I'm not sure what fate holds. Maybe Trump is the battering ram that makes a Cruz presidency possible. Maybe Trump is the guy who wins the office and maybe puts Cruz as VP and sets in motion a generation of change, which would be wonderful. I mean, Vassar Bushville's The Unified Patriots wrote along those lines, and I think that's a very promising scenario if it unfolds. Or, you know, maybe I could be totally wrong. You know, a year from now, I'll be seeking refuge with Johnny Kempin in Alaska trying to avoid Hillary false police. I mean, I don't know.
I tried to say it earlier, Pat Tomatoes. You know what the problem is? Everybody's paying too much attention to these buttholes. You know, in the old days, you know, they had the Electoral College. They didn't let people vote. You didn't have the women vote. You didn't have this woman suffrage. And, I mean, if you're a woman, don't take this the wrong way. But that's what it does. Okay, the more voters you get, the more compliance you get with the system. Just ignore them. Just forget about it. I mean, honest to God, I haven't watched the news, Fox News. I haven't watched any news in months because it's just stupid. Just opt out. Just quit.
Well, there are a lot of people who are tuned out, you know, very tuned out. But I think, you know, what's kind of roiling the waters this time is that there is a very visible public perception that the country is deteriorating. And there wasn't that perception in 2008. I mean, back in 2008, there was this kind of thing, well, you know, Bush screwed up. We just have to replace him and everything will be wonderful again.
Right.
And now people are beginning to realize, hey, this is really starting to get serious. On every front, the economy, national security, crime, immigration, the whole shebang.
The debt. Yep.
Yeah.
I would discredit them. I would discredit them. When you vote for somebody, you gave him power. You gave him credit. You discredit somebody by just ignoring him.
The thing is, though, John, if everybody ignores politicians, they'll do even more bad stuff to us. That's what they're doing
now,
because most people are tuned out. I mean, only like 30% of the population votes at all now.
So 30% of the population decides how you're going to live your life.
Well, people
are determining now that it's so bad that they have to get involved just to keep their own way of life. I mean, if everybody tuned out, it'd be even worse.
Put people in power that made the TSA, in which I had to sit there and squat while she ran her legs up and down my thighs before I came down here to Texas. So, yes, you need to have people engaged who know something about civics
and that's what voting did for you. But that's what voting did for you. You had the TSA basically fondling you, and everybody voted for that.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't want to get into, you know, all
well, they voted for it out of fear because
the
media and the government made you afraid. That's why.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in the airlines, I mean, I'll just say this about the TSA. The airlines did not want the TSA. The government forced it on us. Our socially conservative president of the time, I'm not sure he wanted it, but the Democrats certainly did, and he decided to go along with it. They wanted a big government agency so that they could unionize it. The airlines did not want the TSA. In fact, there was a lot of, since I worked in the industry, when they, you know, got their claws on the airports, I mean, there was just a tremendous amount of tension between the TSA staff and the airline staff. And the Israelis told us, you do not want a government agency. What you want is the airlines to do it, but in a regulated manner that is serious, the way that's how Israel does it. But in the hysteria following 9/11, I mean, unfortunately, big government is people's security blanket, and we went that route.
And that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, if we had people who were less involved with watching damn Kardashians and more in line with knowing what their constitution is, they wouldn't have gone with that. There would have been more of a hue and cry. Instead, we wait. We go, oh, it's a good idea. You know, what do you have to hide? And now, lo and behold, 12 years later, people are bitching and moaning about being felt up, their kids being felt up, people having to strip down, and all of these things. And if you had a modicum of sense, you would have known that this overreach was going to happen. But instead, no. We give away a little bit of liberty to have safety, and thus we deserve neither.
Thank you.
You know, since Cold Warrior is in the chat, I want to make a point, which I think you will like, which is, you know, George Bush, and this is, I think, one of the things that's really eating at a lot of Republicans, which are, you know, we are supposed to be the small government party. And on one issue after another, I mean, George Bush greased the skids for this huge expansion of the government. And if we really are supposed to be the small or smaller government party, we need to change the types of people we nominate. And that means getting people more involved in the political process in either the Republican Party itself and certainly in voting voting in the primaries. And, you know, fortunately, they are starting to do that. I mean, it's just a shame that things had to get this bad before people wake up. Now, I think that we're lucky that if destiny was such that we're going to have this celebrity politician, I'm glad that the celebrity turned out to be Trump versus some of the possible alternatives that Ms. M mentioned, because whatever...
What about a George Clooney presidency?
Do what?
I said, what about a George Clooney presidency?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be wonderful. Why not Robert Redford or Jane Fonda?
Oh, Lord.
I mean, Hillary and she are probably around the same age. I mean, why not President Fonda?
No.
Well, I mean, you're pretty darn close, really, with Obama with that. He hates, you know, with Barry, too.
But, hey, you know, my uncle and my aunt, you know, Obama crazy, blah, blah, blah. You know, my trials and tribulations of living in an Obama household, right? Well, you know, my uncle, he's liking Trump because of Trump's stance on immigration. So I don't think the Democrats, I mean, Bill Maher has been talking about it lately, and he gets it. Oh, he gets it.
Oh, my God.
He said,
and he's scared to death of it.
Right. He gets it, though. He's saying Trump is going to win and his demagoguery, whatever, because the Democrats are clueless when it comes to understanding how tired Americans are of immigration. Immigration from our southern border, immigration from the Middle East. And he's saying the fact that the Democrats won't even say terrorist, you know, or radical Islamist shows that Trump is going to be ushered into the White House. Because if it's a choice between people who want to pretend like there's nothing, no such thing as Islamic terrorism, and Trump saying, let's keep them all out, people are going to go with Trump. So, I mean, even he gets it. You know, a broken clock is right twice a day. But my uncle, you know, my uncle and aunt, Obama and Michelle Tchotchke's everywhere. My uncle has a picture shaking Obama's hand, okay? It's framed. He's even interested in Trump. So that should tell people the appeal, the crossover appeal of Trump.
I wanted to do a show with this theme because I think, you know, the movement conservatives in the Republican Party have just got to understand this better. They don't have to vote for Trump. They don't have to agree with me for, you know, inclining towards Trump. But they have to understand the phenomenon. If they want to make Ted Cruz president of the U.S., that Cruz is going to have to duplicate the same thing that Trump has. And whether he can do it, I don't know. But the necessity is there whether he succeeds or not. You have to reach people who traditionally have not supported you, period. Because there just aren't enough movement conservatives to win an election with the current composition of the electorate, period.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that both parties have just been denying reality so much for so long that the people that were never interested in politics are saying, one, now they're starting to pay attention. Some of them are, and the others are going, wow. You know, Trump's appeal is they think he says it like it is.
No. I'm watching Johnny in chat, and
I'm keeping my mouth shut.
When if we have had such fun discussions on voting on that show, how to predict when the next voting discussion on Free Fire Friday is going to occur, but when it does occur...
No, it's going to be good.
Those are very fun discussion. Although I'm going to expose Mr. Kempin right now, because he actually is involved in the political process on his city council, although... I would venture to say he is probably not the most popular member of the city council currently.
Who would have me arrested? Yeah.
And he had, I think we discussed this, when was it, 2 weeks ago? When you were validating the election?
Yeah, they wouldn't have me arrested.
Yeah. That was an absolute fact, yes. Yeah, they wanted him to certify that the ballots were what, counted properly or stored properly, or
here's the deal. This is so good for all you voters out there. So this is how your This is how your democracy works, okay? You're going to love it. And it's a democracy. Democracy is a dirty word, really. It should be a constitutional republic, and even Richard will agree with me on that one. But anyway, let's go there. So we have an election of a mayor, and I'm on the city council, and my job is on the canvassing board to certify and make sure that the election was fair. So here's how it works. You have people go to the ballots. They put their ballot in a box, piece of paper, and then the election board, three people, count the ballot. So then you have absentee ballots and you have question ballots. Now, the question ballots are the ones that the election board can't make a decision on because, I don't know, they're just, they don't know where they live, if they're registered or whatever. So they bring the ballots to the, they bring the question ballots and the absentee ballots to the city council to verify, certify the election. However, they didn't bring all the other ballots. They said, oh, the mother ballots are good and they're in a safe. Okay? And I said, well, how do I certify something that I can't see? I want to see all the other ballots, too. I want to look at them. Basically, what they said was, no, you don't. Don't you dare, blah, blah, blah. You can't do that. And I said, well, I won't certify the election, so pound sand and I left. At that point, somebody said in the audience, have him arrested, have the state troopers go get him and bring him back and have him certify the election. So by force, this is your democracy, by force, they wanted to have a cop come to my house, come get me, bring me to the goddamn frickin' meeting, and somehow waterboard me into certifying the election. Okay? This is, oh, I'm sorry, but this is true as a freaking heart attack. Anyway, I didn't show up, and the next day, the mayor called me up and goes, hey, we're going to have the ballots there. I called the state, and they said, yeah, you can see the ballots. In fact, they said, we encourage you to look at the ballots. So the whole time I was right. So I go back the next day, and they show me the ballots. I'm like, okay, there we are. See how easy this was? But your democracy already failed at that point when they said they were so ingrained in the thinking that, like these caucuses and all these things these people are going through right now. That's why I laugh. It's you don't think this can happen? I'm talking about a little small tiny town.
Yeah.
This is like a high school election. This is like electing the freaking prom queen, for Christ's sakes.
Well, I mean, you could interpret that two ways. I mean, you could interpret that the system is really broken beyond repair, or you could interpret it as meaning that Johnny took a stand and it was a courageous stand, and he was validated by events and he won. So, you know, the experience is very interesting, and it does illustrate something about, again, what I mentioned before. Government is like people's security blanket. It's like it's this totem that cannot be questioned or contradicted or whatever. And, the left certainly thinks that way, and I think right now it's our overriding, absolutely priority number one to keep Hillary or Bernie out of the White House.
But kind of tomatoes, you got to, there's a lot of men that pay for this with their lives. The Leroy Finnegan thing, that guy paid. Am I going to say that was a good plan? No, I'm not going to say that was a good plan. That was a dumb plan, I think, in my opinion, because it was a stupid cause, but it was a cause he believed in, and he died for it.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to answer that.
No, there is no answer. That's what will happen. I mean, I'm on a small scale. I'm in a little town where I fought the system. I was right, and thank God I was right. Because, like I said, the first thing they said was, get the state trooper, go get him, bring him back. And there's actually a city council member on the city council that agreed with that. That's how dangerous this process can be.
Well,
that's
all government is dangerous, I think, which is why we have the checks and balances to, reduce the risk.
Yeah, but if nobody exercises the check and if nobody exercises that check and balance, what good is it? And we haven't exercised a check and balance in a very long time.
Well,
and
I agree. I don't agree with that totally, but I will agree that we haven't exercised checks and balances to the degree that we could have and should have. And maybe this election is the wake-up call to, you know, really start doing it, since, one establishment of one political party is being raked over the coals by this election process. And, you know, the Democrats may be beyond hope for now, but if we can at least reform the Republicans and get the right people in the White House, maybe we can turn the ship around. But I'll guarantee you, we put another statist in the White House as a Democrat, whether it's, you know, conviction socialist Bernie or lie like a rug Hillary. I mean, Obama might be looking like the golden age compared to what happens next. It's all part of...
Sanders, I'm sorry, he doesn't have a shot in hell of getting in.
Who, Bernie?
I don't think Bernie Sanders has a snowball's chance in hell of getting in. I really don't.
Well, I probably agree with that, because what I think what will happen is that either Hillary, you know, the Democratic establishment will just force Hillary on the party, or Obama will, you know, engineer a coup with Hillary's legal problems and broker the convention to put somebody more congenial to him as the nominee,
like
because
Biden or something.
Do what?
Like Biden?
Yes.
Oh.
Because the Clintons and the Obamas loathe each other, but that's personal. It's not really a vision thing. They both think pretty much alike.
Yeah, but Bill and Hillary hate each other, but they still work together. I'm just keeping it real.
Well, like I said, I mean, you know, with Hillary, President Hillary Clinton, I mean, I may switch over, I may cross over to Johnny's camp.
I'm telling you, just Kate, come on my side right now, Italian Tomatoes. It's all good over here.
I don't think I have the fortitude, though, to, you know, live in the wild.
You can do it, brother. You can do it. You can handle it.
We have another caller. Let's see. 845, area code, who are you?
Hi, this is, I'm with Governor Cuomo's task force. We're tracking down people that used to live in New York.
Oh, okay.
No, I just want you to know that no matter where you are, we're going to find you and bring you back to this state. No one escapes New York, just so you know.
Back to New York justice.
Yeah. If you look out your window, you might see Hillary out there now waiting for you.
No, I know. Well, yeah.
Oh,
that's,
my God.
That's Mike from New York, who was also called into Free Fire Friday before. And we've spoken before. He is unfortunately still trapped in New York. I was able to escape some years ago. Governor Cuomo, though, he is in quite a bit of legal trouble from what I've read.
Prepehara, I can never pronounce that man's name, who's the attorney, the federal attorney that's down there. I mean, he went after Skelos and he got the speaker, the Republican speaker, the Senate, the majority leader, and then he also got Sheldon Silver, who was the Democrat that was the head of the assembly, and locked them up. They've both been sentenced now. They're gone. And Sheldon Silver, I don't know if you're tracking it, but it was hysterical. In front of the judge in court, he defended himself by saying that pay to play, it's part of the culture of doing business, being in politics in New York State. Yes, he told the court, he said, this is normal. There's nothing wrong that I did. It's how the system works. Can you imagine the guts So they sentenced, I guess they'll be appealing it, but he's not going to be, Brajara is not putting any charges against Cuomo, which to me says that Obama probably got a hold of the Department of Justice and got the word down to this federal prosecutor and attorney and said, leave him alone.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean, but the fact is, yeah, I mean, I think is very likely what happened. But Cuomo had national aspirations, which are over.
Yes, he did. Yep,
and,
you're right.
So, you know, it's kind of it. You know, I don't follow New York politics that closely, but it's kind of interesting to see what will happen next there. But you know, on the main thing, you know, talk about a state, both New York and California, where this government is security blanket thing has gone so completely out of control. I mean, those two states are like the picture postcards of what you don't want the country to turn into.
If you have Google in front of you, you're going to read this and you're going to gasp. Do a Google search for tip line, NoJay, NoJay. NoJay is a state assemblyman up north. Tip line, NoJay, guns. And now a link you're going to look for says Gunpowder Bill or Gunpowder Bob or something. The actual letter that state assemblyman wrote to the Department of Justice about Cuomo's tip line. What Cuomo did, because of his new gun law, he wanted to go after anybody in New York that had firearms that wasn't turning them in or anything, and offered a $500 reward if you turned in your neighbor. Not if they were convicted, just if they were arrested. You could call in an anonymous tip line, and you'd be given $500 for turning in your neighbor.
Hey, is that Mayor Muriel Bowser?
Do you see it? No, Jay? If you're doing
it? Oh, yeah, I looked at it. I'm looking at Mayor Muriel Bowser.
It's, I don't know. It says tip line?
Yeah. It says $2,500.
No,
it's 2-727-9099.
No. Don't look at, try to look for the link that has, that says it was by Black Powder or Gunpowder Bob or something. It says that in the link name.
I might call these guys up just to play with them.
Metro
Police, Washington, D.C.
That's scary stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to call them from your phone, though.
That's okay.
I'll leave it alone.
That's right. No conspiracy on the show.
But no, can you imagine that? Will you resort to something like that to turn the citizens into like informants on each other? And here's the assemblyman going, "What are you doing?"
Well, you know, the IRS has a program like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, the IRS has had that for decades.
And believe me, they pay a lot more than $500, too.
I think they give you a percentage of what's captured, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Our government is out of control. Conventional Republican and conservative politicians have not been able to fix it.
No.
And I think that's why people are ready to roll the dice on either somebody like Donald Trump, who at least has the potential of using celebrity power to change things, or they may be willing to roll the dice on a conviction politician conservative like Ted Cruz, who certainly, you know, has shown some willingness to shake things up during his time in Congress. But what they absolutely don't want on our side is business as usual. They do not want Jeb Bush. They do not want a Kasich. They don't want an unproven Marco Rubio who seems to be rolled by the system. Whenever he has to take a stance, he just rolls and goes with the flow. It's not going to work this time. I mean, if we put up somebody like that, we're going to get a Hillary or a Bernie or because half the Republican electorate and all those potential crossover voters are just going to sit at home.
Yeah, I'm putting the link that I spoke about right here. It's in now. That's the link. I just got in front of my computer. That's the link.
Yeah, hey, it's just not that. I just found one in Washington, D.C., too. And they want to enact the same kind of thing in Fairbanks, Alaska, believe it or not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Telling your neighbor, yep.
You know what? There's a lot of anger that I see out here. What I do, I mean, I've said this before on a couple of shows. I got a little game that I play when you're at the store, you're cashing out of the market, and you go to use your credit card on the terminal, and you're waiting in line, and there are other people waiting in line with you to cash out at the supermarket. And so what I'll do is I'll swipe my card, then I'll look at the screen, like dumbfounded, and go, vote for Hillary, just to see the reaction from people that are in line with me. Now, years ago, nobody would say a word. Everybody kept their... Not now. Now people start, they don't even know who I am. I don't know what they start talking. I had one old lady that was next to me when I said that. I said, vote for Hillary. She looked at me and then pushed me over to look at the screen. She went, bullshit. Just let's look at the screen to see what was on it. And it opens up the dialogue. That's how angry people are. And they all start talking, said, you know, this is out of control. We've got to make a change. We've had enough. People that don't know each other just discussing it in line at the market. I've never seen that before.
Well,
you know,
I mean, you're seeing. I mean, you know, you see the anecdotal evidence with, you know, the surging turnout of these primaries, and the Republican debates, which drew, you know, so many millions more viewers than they used to draw, whereas on the Democratic side, turnout is depressed, and nobody's watching their debates because nobody cares. I mean, how can you spend more than 3 minutes listening to Hillary for anything? I mean, she's so annoying. So, I mean, there is real promise on our side, but what I am afraid of, again, you know, going back to the central theme of the show, is that there are certain people in the Republican Party, either movement conservatives or the establishment, who just don't want to accept this crossover reality that, you know, we haven't been reaching the numbers of people that we should, and we need to get that done. Or, you know, the proverbial goose is cooked.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of conservatives and Republicans, well, I don't really consider Republicans conservatives, so I'm just going to say conservatives. A lot of conservatives have really ignored the soft culture portion of the populace that we have, like the influence of soft culture around the world. In fact, it's one of the things that we export because we don't really make anything anymore. That's the one thing that we do have going for us is our soft culture. And a lot of that has been considered to be, frivolous, you know, in the conservative community. But, you know, if you look at these Democrats, they trot out celebrity after celebrity after celebrity, and, you know, they're all shaking each other's dicks. The celebrities want to feel like they're doing something more than playing pretend on TV for millions of dollars, and they want to feel important, and they're providing something to the world. And, you know, the politicians, you know, politics is celebrity for ugly people. So they get the FaceTime with the glamorous life and what have you. And for a long time, conservatives have, you know, oh, pshaw, we have more serious things to consider. And because of that, that's why you have had this celebritant presidency that we've had with Barack Obama, where we're constantly listening to this guy tell us about his NCAA picks and everything else, and fell on the cover of Vogue. Now, so yes, this is a time, you know, you may not like Trump, maybe you don't care for the demagoguery. I know I don't care for the lack of specificity in what his plans are. But at the same time, it is kind of a middle finger to all these people that have made promises that they didn't keep. So why not go with a guy who you don't know what he's going to do, but you don't want to go with the people that you don't know what they're going to do?
Yeah, you know? Bread and circuses has stopped being a distraction, and now it's government by bread and circuses.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of like, You know, so maybe if, you know, conservatives really understand that, you know, sometimes you have to appeal to the low information voter, and this is how this is happening. With
absolutely, and you know, on you know, conservatives need to kind of overcome their kind of death wish, which is, you know, they ranted and raved about Obama and how the media covered for him and stuff like that. And now they have a couple of candidates. I think Trump is better at it than Cruz, but both look promising. They have the possibility of their guys using the same media savvy to, you know, win an election and really achieve a change in the direction of the country, and they're balking at taking it. And, you know, my view is, guys, if there's a lifeboat and the ship is sinking, get in it, you know?
Exactly.
Get in it. I mean, that doesn't guarantee you're going to survive, but you won't go down with the ship that's sinking. So
here's the difference. Here's the difference between conservatives and Democrats. And I mean, you may say, well, that's because, you know, we're a real deal, whatever. But going along with what you said, the guy was talking to Democrats, and he was like, what do you think about Bernie? Oh, I love Bernie. He's wonderful. He's true. He's real. He's present. What do you think about Clinton? She's untrustworthy. I can't stand her. I'll never, you know, she's just a terrible example of a Democrat. She's a crony capitalist, blah, blah, blah. He said, well, if she gets the nomination, will you vote for her in the general election? And the person said, yes. Now,
because they all have been told that Republicans are just plain evil.
I'm going to have to cut this short because we're going to run out of time, and the show's just got a couple of minutes left. But,
yeah.
I mean, that's a good closing point to go out on. We know the power of the popular culture. We need to find a way to get around it. And I think Trump is promising. Cruz might be promising. The conventional Republican establishment politicians are going to blow it again. We cannot take that risk. The stakes are too high.
Exactly.
And I want to thank everybody who called in, because we are almost out of time.
Good show, thank you.
I'm going to close with a tribute to the Supremes, who achieved more for the African American community than Barack Obama ever did. And good night, everybody, and thanks very much.
Good night.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye.
Nice B3.
Yeah.